Ladies and gentlemen, this is another episode of the Preach Jacobs podcast. Thank you guys for listening. We are brought to you by Big Media and sponsored by Soul House at Kolger Center for the Arts. Make sure you go get tickets to our next Soul House sessions, which is going to be November the 19th. And we're going to have author Delana Dameron having a great conversation with us. Get those tickets. You can go to KolgerCenterForTheArts.com or go to all my socials. Y'all know me. Go to Preach Jacobs. Get the tickets. Yada, yada, yada. We also have the opening of our new exhibit for the people that came out to our ColaCon session this past October. It's been really, really fantastic response to it. We're really excited for you guys to see the entire exhibit, which is a ColaCon anniversary exhibit focusing on the combination of hip-hop and comics. We have artwork from the amazing Dan Lish, who is an artist out of London. We have Sanford Green. We have Drake Lopez. Have many, many great things to offer for that. So make sure you guys come to the reception November the 14th, 5 to 7 p.m. at the Soul House Gallery, which is going to be on the third floor of Kolger Center for the Arts. More information, go to their website, hit me up. I'm very excited for my next guest. Any excuse that I have to invite fly people to my home to eat croissants and drink coffee, I'm really excited about it and always excited to get people that are taking advantage of public service in the great city of Columbia that I absolutely adore. We have Oddity Bustles, Dr. Oddity Bustles, who you want to support, go to her website, oddityforcolumbia.com. She is our current city council at large member who ran in 2021 and started in 2022. She's our incumbent, and she wants to talk more about her election this year. And I want to talk to her more about what got her started. Once again, make sure you guys go to the polls November the 4th to support your city. Get active. Get involved. My goal ain't to tell you who to vote for. My goal is to tell you to get involved. Miss Oddity Bustles, how you
Thank
doing?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. All right. So first things first, I've known you for a long time, but I always think it's interesting to give people kind of an origin story. And one of the things that I always think is really interesting is that usually there's like an aha moment for people to say, I want to get involved in politics and local politics. What was the thing that galvanized you to say, you know what, I want to run?
Well, first of all, I have to do a slight correction. It is oddityforthecity.com.
Oddity for the City.
And you know why I did that? I want to make sure people remember how to pronounce my name, mm-hmm. and it's a really great mnemonic device in that sense. But yeah, my origin story starts, like many young people, very disgruntled and disheartened by the state of affairs in 2020. We were at the height of the pandemic, mm-hmm. and I had every intention of leaving Columbia after I finished my PhD. At that time, I had just started a job with Children's Trust, which is kind of an arm of Department of Social Services focused on children's health mm-hmm. and well-being. And I was really enjoying my experience there, and then we all shut down and went remote. Mm-hmm. And I found myself just being so, I think, disgruntled and disheartened by the amount of misinformation that was out there around public health, equity, disparities, you know, all of these terms that we'd been studying in school and putting into practice the majority of my career. And so I knew that I had the opportunity to help take these really complicated or in some cases foreign concepts and make them easier for people to understand because we were living in a public health pandemic in real time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started to do that via social media, through op-eds, you know, contributing to local radio stations. And I think the turning point moment was really when an elected official reached out to me and said, hey, doc, I'm just calling you because I'm trying to figure out what my stance is on opening schools back up. Mm-hmm. I know you have the expertise on this. Would you give me your advice? And after I had that call, I sat back and I said, wow, I am 30 years old mm-hmm. and I am giving advice to some of the most influential state and federal elected officials on our strategy. That's what makes South Carolina special, is that they need young people that care to stay. And that was the moment where I realized I can just sit around and talk about it or I can do something about it. And so I've always said Columbia has one degree of separation. If you have an idea, you will find someone that can help you do it.
Absolutely.
And my neighbor ended up being my predecessor, who was extremely excited to hear that I was going to run for her seat as she pursued another one. And through a series of introductions, maybe 2 months later, I had officially launched my campaign in 2021.
All right. Well, I'm interested in that as well, right? Because you have the experience of having a conversation about what motivated you to get involved politically here. And now, after winning a seat, I'm interested in knowing two things. What was the first big realization that you had when you first was like sworn in and say, hey, you know, I'm a part of this process now? And how has this campaigning second time around been different than the first one?
So to answer that first part, I think people often ask me, was it what you expected? And I always answer, I didn't know what to expect. Exactly. I don't come from a political background. I think my only inkling of what local government was like was from Parks and Rec, right? And though in many episodes, it is very accurate. I think I cried when Leslie Knope won her election because they did it so authentically and so well in that show. I found a couple of things. One was policy making is not black and white. There's mm-hmm. always a gray area, and there's always a way in which you can find something to build a coalition around you or a happy medium that everybody may not agree with but accepts. Mm-hmm. And that skill set is incredibly important in local government in order for you to move policies forward. The other thing I learned, and I kind of knew, was change is slow. Mm-hmm. When the city has been doing things a certain way for 12 to 15 years, you know, and I hear comments from staff saying, we're just not used to city council members reading the agenda so closely, mm-hmm. right? Like it, I realize that there's also going to have to be this kind of transitional period where the staff is getting used to this new council and me and my style, and I'm getting used to their style. The form of government we have, technically, we only have two employees as city council members, the city manager and the city attorney. Mm-hmm. But we all know that there's so many other people that actually execute on the things that we're voting on or deciding on. So that was a little bit of, I think, an adjustment. And then, of course, always reminding myself when there is pressure to vote or be a certain way or to, you know, go along with an idea, as much as your relationships with your colleagues are important, mm-hmm. and they are, I answer to the people. The people of Columbia elected me overwhelmingly. And that is what I had to constantly remind myself, because in the moment as a newcomer, there are many moments that you feel very much like, okay, maybe I should just go along to get along. And then I would think back to 2021 and what we ran on, and that was being bold, being an outsider that wasn't born or raised here, and my city chose me. And so that's what I kind of keep in my head, even this time around as the incumbent.
Mm-hmm. We were having that conversation about how do we get younger people involved. And I would talk to people in the community, whether they're involved in politics or not, because, you know, as someone that's involved in the art scene and as a creative, to get people to show up for events, that's politics, right? Because you're asking people, if I'm going to show up for this event, and if I spend money for a ticket, that's money I'm not spending on groceries, or that's money that I'm not spending on something else. So people are always intertwined with politics in the way of how do we get younger people to get involved? What would you say to younger people that aren't really involved in the local election voting process, because either they might assume that only national elections work, or they might not think that their voice matters? Like, how can you speak to them to let them know, like, getting civically engaged with local politics is something that is of their best interest?
All politics are local. And mm-hmm. I have said that several times in all of the different mediums that I use in social media. When you think about what affects your everyday life around roads and infrastructure and your neighborhoods and what businesses are coming into town, what type of funding you have for your arts organizations, it all comes from your local leaders. We may not have the same clout and sexiness of like federal and state media coverage and just discourse around some of the things that are happening, but we make more of an impact. And I actually would say that I really don't want the craziness of the state and federal it kind of infiltrating into the great work that we're doing. Now, does that mean that it doesn't affect us in some way? Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. We're seeing cuts, and we're seeing, you know, just recently, state of South Carolina, exactly. Yeah. They announced that SNAP benefits are stopped for the month of November. And so we quickly put together a set of resources of faith-based and nonprofit stakeholders that are going to be providing, you know, food pantries and access to food in the interim. And that's what we can do as a city. But mm-hmm. the point is, we were able to directly go out and provide a service that the federal government said is no longer available. So when I tell young people why they should be involved, it's because all politics are local. Local government is what affects your everyday life. And the way in which I feel that I've been able to galvanize and mobilize a lot of young folks, and you know I'm a data nerd, so I looked at my data the first time I ran. I did incredibly well with first-time voters that had never voted in a municipal election.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I truly think it's because I am very authentic and relatable. I still share my life as a mom, a wife, a friend who loves taking pictures with her gal pals, right? But also, they also get to see the serious side of what is it the city council actually does. For so many people, it was very much like a black box where they didn't really understand what it was. And so for young people, I think it's really important to be a candidate that's unapologetic and very exciting and inspiring. I think that's what Gen Zers and other kind of generations below me, which feels very weird to say, because I feel like I'm still young.
Yeah, that's funny because like, we're talking about young voters and it's like, I ran when I was 30.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what they're looking for. They don't care so much about the traditional, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican. They're looking for someone who's inspiring. And I'll go so far to say they don't even have to agree with you on every single thing that you're running on or serving on. They just want someone that will listen, that shows up, and that is relatable and human. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's going to be key for this election as well.
So what have you changed? I'm wondering when you ran for the first time, you know, I always say that politics in a way, theoretically or philosophically, should be easy because it's not about what you think, it's what the people think, and you're trying to do the will of the people. What are some of the things that you've seen or heard that was the concerns of the people of the city that unfortunately might still sound like the same concerns? And what have things, if you've heard from running and winning the first time to hearing now, campaigning now, that you've actually heard people say that it's improved in Columbia?
Oh, there's so many great things. First and foremost, I got more calls about homelessness and negative interactions with people that were homeless or were having a mental health crisis than I did about water and potholes, which is typically most of the issues we're resolving in a quick period of time. I have heard from so many people since the launch of Rapid Shelter Columbia, which was my first kind of initiative that I spearheaded alongside council and staff.
Explain that more for people that's listening and hearing you for the first time. Explain
so
that
Rapid
more.
Shelter Columbia is essentially a short-term solution providing, I guess the cool term is tiny homes for people, but I think the important aspect is you get your own space. You get to live with dignity. You have running water. You have a bed. It is your own space where you can leave your stuff and get out of the hard situation that you may be in by connecting with providers, connecting with services on the campus. And as a public health professional, I really wanted to take an evidence-based approach. And all the evidence was showing that packing 500, 600 people into one big, large room, which we typically think of in terms of like homeless shelters, was not working. Think about the trauma, the addiction, the complex factors that often contribute to homelessness. And so we launched that within the first year and a half of me being in office, and it's been up and running for almost 3 years now, and I'm very proud to say that we are typically at capacity, and we have already housed 100 people into permanent housing. So they stay there anywhere from 60 to 90 days, get the services that they need, and then we hopefully find them a permanent housing solution. So that was something that a lot of folks came to me and said, I'm so glad you actually tried something. Mm-hmm. For so long, people were so fearful on council to try something because addressing homelessness is not only a complicated topic, it can also be a very politically heated topic. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to get it perfect, but at least, you know, my attitude's, let's try it. If it doesn't work, let's try something else. Mm-hmm. But what the status quo is not working. So that was one thing. Another thing I heard a lot about was around the wait times for customer service. People would be on the phone for 45 minutes to an hour and no one would talk to them about their bill or whatever it may be. We got to change that pretty quickly. Within 3 or 4 months, we were able to hire a third party that was kind of the operator instead of our staff having to triage calls. They triaged it and the wait time went down to less than a minute.
Oh, wow.
And
really?
It's something so small that just made people feel just immediately like, wow, okay, I'm getting to where I need to go in terms of getting my questions answered. And alongside that, one of the things I was very adamant about is we can't have 6 different apps, okay? We need one app. Everybody has a mobile phone at this point, and we need somewhere where people can just know where their request, their complaint, their feedback is in the process. And so really, really excited that the My Cola SC app was launched in the last year. And some of the feedback that I've gotten about, you know, people reporting a pothole, they love that they can see exactly what staff member is assigned to that task and see exactly where it is in the process, and they don't have to pick up the phone. And you know, millennials, we do not like calling.
No, at all.
Like literally, my sister would say, I'll give you $5 if you make this doctor's appointment call for me. So these are some of the things that I've seen that have been, you know, really exciting. I think there's a new energy in Columbia, you know, with me, with the rest of council, that is very much focused on making Columbia a vibrant destination to live, work, and play. But I mean, the work isn't done. That's why I'm running for re-election. There's a lot more to do. For example, Finley Park, 3.5 years in the making, but had been abandoned for 15 plus years, is opening up after the election, right? And it took us a long time to get there.
What was some of the pushbacks? Because and talk to us about what's happening there, because I know they have some events that are happening soon at Finley Park.
Yeah, well, I think the pushback was more so that it was a major investment by the city. We're spending upwards of $25 million to renovate it. And I think you have to be in a financially well-positioned to make that sort of investment. And I think that for many years, the city was operating in the red before I came onto council. And now we have a very healthy general fund. And we are able to finance things like Finley Park in a way that it's sustainable and it's also financially responsible. So very excited about Finley Park opening. The shows that you mentioned, one of the best practices in the parks and recreation world is activation of parks. So basically changing the norms and the culture about the types of activities and the types of interactions that you have at the park. So we just voted on our special events policy, including some of the fees associated with Finley Park. And the idea is you're going to have 4 or 5 major festivals there a year. And then, you know, community groups will have the opportunity to reserve different parts of the park to do their activities. And what that does is it activates, has people constantly at Finley Park, which then allows for some of the kind of concerns that people have had of illegal or criminal activity to greatly be reduced. And in addition to that, we've budgeted 100 additional personnel just focused on the safety for the park.
Well, one of the things you were talking about is, you know, sometimes one of the things you learn with city council is that things kind of take time. And a lot of times when you're talking about civic engagement, I was watching something and there was a conversation about the civil rights movement and a lot of people that were talking about, hey, we understand that the stuff that we're fighting for, we might not see this, you know, for a long time. How do you balance that? Since we're young, right? Well, you're younger than me, but how do we balance the idea of convincing the community that, hey, things that we need to invest in is going to be important that you're not going to see immediately? So when we have conversations about, you know, development in the city, where it's always something that is, it has the possible long-term benefits, but there's like sticker shocks and sticker costs. Like, how do you figure out ways to have those conversations with the constituents about, hey, here's something that I can explain that might not be something that is understandable upfront? So when you're talking about, you know, investing in the community and saying, look, I understand that, you know, some of these things might take time and you might not even see it when you're in office. Like, how do you handle that, being someone that is excited about seeing things move forward, but it takes time?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. You have to celebrate the small wins along the way, the incremental changes that are occurring, because you're right. There's going to be many things that, you know, I'll look back and say 10, 15 years from now, I had a part in it, but it's not necessarily something that happened during the time that I was in office. There's a couple of ways, but I think the most important theme is you have to meet people where they are. There were a lot of my colleagues that were very uncomfortable with how transparent I was on social media about what the city is doing, including the times where I felt like we weren't doing a good job. But that has really helped engage a lot of folks that really didn't have an idea of what we have jurisdiction over, as well as, you know, what we're working on. I also held town halls. We do one-on-one community conversations. And then there's also a lot of great kind of coalitions and neighborhood groups that often are a proxy for getting the word out in terms of what's going on in the city. And I have learned that people don't expect things to be completed overnight. They just want to know where it is. They just want to know where we are in the process. So I have tried to lead in a way that's very open and honest. And you know, for example, recently short-term rentals, Airbnbs have come up.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first to say, you know, we didn't do a good job with enforcement. We should have been enforcing our existing laws so that the bad actors that were running these short-term rentals were not messing it up for the rest of the neighborhood. I don't think that's very common to admit something like that publicly, but I think that's what builds trust and then people wanting to listen to you when you're sharing about the different things you're working on.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the thing that's going to keep people in Columbia? So if you're acting as the ambassador of Columbia, right? I think the biggest thing that happens when there's younger people involved in a city, they get done with school and then they're like, all right, I had to make this decision. You know, if I get married, want to have a family, do I stay here? Do I move to a neighboring city? Do I go somewhere else? What is the thing that you could tell these young people to say, hey, stick around?
Well, I think first and foremost, and I will call my colleagues out in academia as well, they don't even present or position Columbia as an option after graduation. So that's a major disconnect there. But two, if you have
why do you think that happens?
Because I just don't think they know all the things that are going on. And I think historically, the city really was just a college town,
mm-hmm.
right? Now we are building an identity, and I'm proud to be a part of that identity. As you know, I did a lot of our rebranding work alongside council to really energize and help show the city as this cohesive entity that is excited about welcoming you here. And that actually led us to being able to build a bridge with Experience Columbia,
mm-hmm.
allowing me to do some work that kind of crossed over the city and our tourism department to help promote the capital region. But I think that they just don't know. And it's just, you know, that's just how it's always been, right? But I would tell young people, and I do tell them now, that there are many great things coming here. I recognize that we need more jobs that turn into careers. We need more large firms or industries that allow you to work here and compete with other neighboring cities. But I also think that if you're an entrepreneur and you need a space to build your idea, your dream, your business, we have several incubators that are coming online. We have several programs and I think groups that are focused on keeping those entrepreneurs here. And the great part about entrepreneurs is they're not wedded to a specific location. And I think that that has been a missed opportunity for us to keep some of those folks here in Columbia. But I think young people want walkability. They want to pick up their coffee, walk to work, walk home. We're working on that in terms of infrastructure and doing some of the road diets that you've seen on South Main and Five Points. And now hopefully if we get the funding on Assembly. But I think they also want jobs that are good paying jobs that aren't just state government or nonprofit. And I think that's what I want to focus on these next 4 years.
What are the things that you're hearing on the campaign trail are like the main concerns that you are hearing from people when you're talking to them about, you know, what they want you to do for this election term?
Well, I think in general, people are really excited about the direction that this council has headed, focusing very much on quality of life and some of the things that we've talked about today. I'm hearing a lot about making sure that housing remains affordable for those that want to own a home. And that is something that while we can't do everything about it, we can certainly have, you know, our role in ensuring that there's a more supply of housing for young professionals or families or even the elderly that want to live in the downtown core. I'm also hearing a lot of excitement around the riverfront that we've secured $20 million for to expand William Street and as well as, of course, Finley Park and some of the, I think, large scale projects that are coming in. But I think top of mind for folks is continuing to be for us to be transparent as a government, ensuring that there's more units of housing. And then, of course, addressing some of the disparities that we're seeing across the city around food access and some of the other kind of social determinants of health that we talk about.
What is your background in the medical field and your way that you do your research? How do you apply that to your council approach?
Yeah, I have my PhD in health behavior and health promotion. And the way that I use that is two major ways. One is getting that experience and that expertise has allowed me to take the most complicated concepts, whether it's around economic development or issuing bonds or even homelessness and how homelessness funding is structured. it is very easy for me because of that background to take a very complicated concept and translate it in a way that is accessible to everyday people. And I think oftentimes when information is inaccessible, that's when we make assumptions. So I really like that I'm able to use my background to do that. Another way is I always want us to be coupling lived experiences with data. Mm-hmm. So when we go back to the issue around short-term rentals, we didn't have good data about the actual number of short-term rentals until we passed an updated ordinance in 2023. Just now, we're starting to see, for example, my neighborhood, Earlwood, 40% almost are short-term rentals. That is disproportionate compared to, you know, some of the other areas where it's less than 10. That data helps you make the case for why changes need to be made. And I'll never forget one of my colleagues that served on the task force with me to prevent and end homelessness. He said, you know, Dr. Bustles, the way that you even just think about this problem, I could have never done because I don't have that public health background. You immediately went to, okay, multifaceted. We got to think about mental health. We got to think about access to care. And he said, that's just not in my wheelhouse because I come from a development background. And I think that's what made me realize that it's just ingrained in me to always connect the dots, figure out the underlying root causes of problems, and then make solving that problem achievable in a way that the city can actually do something about it.
You know, I have like a personal like attachment to this next one. Like, what is your approach to the artist community in Columbia? Where I know that, you know, we've been heavily involved as far as like going to events, doing shows. How do you translate to whether it's other people on council or people in the community that don't understand the importance of supporting local arts and the local arts community?
I have said this, I think, before. Art is something that affects and touches everyone, because even if you're not an artist or a creative, you are consuming, you are celebrating, you are surrounded by art. And art in many ways ties directly into quality of life, economic prosperity, you know, how safe and clean a city is. And so when I'm talking to, say, potential developers that want to invest and they talk about, oh, we want to get a mural here on the side of this parking lot we're building you, mm-hmm, or parking garage, I'll immediately be like, oh, we have some great artists in the local community that you should showcase. Because then it also, you being an outside developer, you then have that local tie. You were able to use your capital and your investment into the city to also help uplift a local artist. When I talk about art to everyday people, I talk about the ways in which it not only enriches our city physically and, you know, socially, it also helps keep a lot of great talent in our city, which I think is really important when we talk about talent retention, as well as, you know, keeping young people here. And then, I mean, you also know, Preach, you know, when I first ran, I commissioned art from a local friend of ours, an artist who talks a lot about how oftentimes people will go with who they're comfortable with, and it'll be someone that's not here.
Yeah.
And we really need to focus on making sure we choose local first. And so I always talk about how we got to stop working in silos, and we got to make sure that there truly is cohesion amongst our art community so that we can use our platform to uplift them.
Absolutely, because I always would say that anytime there's like murals or things done from people that are out of town, I'm like, we have the talent here to make sure that we do anything that needs to be done. We don't have to outsource that because we have talent here that I will put against anybody. So that's always an important thing to me. And that's one of those things that sometimes is difficult to explain to the community because they just sometimes not understand the importance of art. And we need people on council in those public places kind of fighting for that as well. Once again, please make sure you go to oddityforthecity.com to find out more information, to support, to donate, or to volunteer if you need to do that as well. Any last parting words that, let's say, November 4th, you're back in there, we're ready to go. What do you have for the vision for the next couple of years in Columbia?
Well, I will say 4 years ago, I want to thank everyone that helped make history by choosing me, a political outsider, someone who is the child of immigrants, someone who isn't in the political establishment and actively has the establishment still working against her. You chose me to lead our city because I think we all resonated with the fact that for too long, Columbia was lagging behind in terms of public safety, good paying jobs, and transparency and accountability of government. And I think that from our conversation today, I hope it's very clear to you all that they weren't just words, but actually things that have been put into action these last 4 years. And I'm excited to continue to move some of these initiatives forward should you choose me again on November 4th, because I care about the community that I live in and that I'm raising my son in. And as a child of immigrants, I can tell you I know what it means to plant your roots somewhere, to nurture and grow your life there so that the next generation is set up for success. And so when I look forward to the next 4 years, I look at following through on all of the things that we have started to make Columbia the best place to live, work, and play, but most importantly, to make it a place that every single person is proud to call home.
Are you working on a memoir? Because it sounds like, yeah,
such a, I should, such an amazing, you know, on top story. Of everything I'm doing. Yeah,
it's such an amazing story. I'm really, really glad you got a chance to sit down with me. Once again, please go to oddityforthecity.com. It's A-D-I-T-I for the city.com. I can't imagine the amount of times people mispronounce your name. I go through that all the time as well, because my real name is Derek with an H. So that's why I have a nickname. So, right. So thank you guys so much for stopping by. Also, make sure you guys go hit the polls November the 4th. Vote. Thank you for speaking with Oddity Bustles, who is running to be reelected for city council at large in Columbia. Any final words?
Thank you for having me. And this coffee is very good.
Listen, I try very hard. Guys, thank you for listening to the Preach Jacobs podcast. Once again, get tickets for our next event for our Soul House sessions with author Delana Dameron, November the 19th. Get your tickets. Go to CocoaCenterForTheArts.com or go to all my social media. Also, our ColaCon anniversary art exhibit reception is going to be November the 14th. That's going to be on a Friday at Coca Center for the Arts, 5 to 7 at the Soul House Gallery. You can also catch me every Tuesday night at Lula Drake playing jazz records. And make sure you follow me and all that other stuff. Thank you all for listening. Until next time. Peace.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.